Well, all right.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Neil Coulon with Behind the Steel Curtain. He is Lance Williams, formerly of Steel Curtain Radio. This is The Standard is The Standard Show. We are going to talk some Steelers football with you here. It is currently, at the time of recording, Thursday evening at halftime of the Patriots-Jets game. I don't know, Lance, if you're watching any of that, if that even matters toward the rest of your football week. It certainly doesn't matter to mine. It doesn't look like a particularly good game is being played, which I think in many ways can describe the Steelers' week one loss to the Tennessee Titans. The last time we spoke with all of you was on the verge of the start of the NFL season for the 2013 Pittsburgh Steelers. The start itself was not particularly impressive. A 16-9 loss and a score that didn't exactly reflect the quality of the game being played. Lance, your initial thoughts on the Titans' loss?
Well, it's interesting that you talked about the game that's being played, the Patriots and Jets game. And in that game, you see arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, if not the greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, really struggling, having a hard time converting third downs because there are a lack of weapons at his disposal. You know, you have no Welker, you have no Gronkowski, you have no Hernandez, Brandon Lloyd, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it even shows that an all-time great like a Tom Brady without sufficient weapons is going to struggle. And that's what you're seeing with this Pittsburgh Steelers team, and that's what you're seeing with its offense. You take away Mike Wallace, you take away Heath Miller, and they're going to struggle. Two of their leading touchdown catchers of last year. And so to a certain extent, I'm not very surprised that they struggled offensively. I just didn't think it was going to look that ugly, of course, because I predicted that they would win and score 23 points. So clearly I was off. But in retrospect, you can see that it's going to be a struggle moving forward because of a lack of weapons at Ben's disposal.
I think they could have had seven quarters and not scored 23 points in that game the way that it felt. Along with those playmakers that you listed among the Steelers that were not there, another one wasn't exactly making plays, but obviously his presence in the game was not helpful in any way, shape, or form. The lack of Maurkice Pouncey that brought former tackle turned tight end into center, Kelvin Beachum, into the game, which to me was a significant problem with the loss in week one to the Titans. How big, in your estimation, Lance, was the loss of Pouncey in that game, and what can the Steelers expect moving forward?
I think once Pouncey went out, you saw that that offensive line was very disorganized. You saw just some basic things in pass protection, just picking up basic tackle in stunts, proved to be very difficult for Mike Adams. So I think the loss of your best offensive lineman, a three-time Pro Bowl guy on an offensive line that's very young to start with, had not played much together, is going to be very significant. And I think it's going to basically make the maturation process of that offensive line take that much longer because you're losing your best player. And I think it's going to have a significant impact on that offense moving forward.
Definitely an issue with communication. I agree with that 1,000%. Mike Adams looked like he didn't understand what a tackle end stunt even is, let alone ever having seen one in a game before. It was definitely a problem, but injuries themselves marked a significant chunk of this football team to this point this season. They're going to have to continue to struggle with that as we get going. What you're going to see now is, along with Pouncey, you lost Larry Foote for the season, you lost LaRod Stevens-Howling for the season. That means you're going to have seldom heard Keon Wilson starting at inside linebacker for the Steelers in week two against the Cincinnati Bengals. Lance, who's Keon Wilson?
Like I told you off air, if I was in Giant Eagle or Piggly Wiggly's or Publix or Safeway, you know, I'm good with my regional grocery stores. I wouldn't know who Keon Wilson was. I would probably walk in and say, who's that big guy? And by the way, can you hand me those Jerome Bettis pickles from the top shelf? I can't quite reach those. Who is he?
Keon Wilson in this segment is going to get top billing over what would ordinarily be a fairly significant news item. But this past week for the Steelers, it was pretty much par for the course. The return of running back Jonathan Dwyer also came up this week. Is this move anything of a surprise? Was it a big deal? Not a big deal? Does this save anything? Is it exactly the move the Steelers need to make? What did you think?
I don't think it was a surprise. He's familiar with the offense. He knows them. They know him. So if you needed to plug and play a guy right back into your system on short notice, the move makes sense. Am I convinced that Jonathan Dwyer is the savior? Somehow he's splitting the Red Sea. And if the Red Sea split, he would probably bounce it outside and get tackled by the Philistines, knowing Jonathan Dwyer. So, you know, for all of you Steeler fans that think somehow he's the savior, I don't know. There's no manna from on high with Jonathan Dwyer. It's just a stopgap move that's a plug-the-dike type move. And something that's an obvious, easy move. But Jonathan Dwyer isn't going to be Franco Harris anytime soon.
A lot gets made out of Dwyer's re-signing as some kind of see, I told you so from him to the team. My impression of it was, unless they paid him $1.323 million, which is what they were on schedule to pay him before he got cut, I don't see how the Steelers really lost anything in that deal, and clearly he wouldn't be on the Steelers if not for the injury of Stephen Fowling. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I definitely think it's a step in the wrong direction to call him a savior of anything. The fact is, what this team needs saving is from itself, whether that's David Castro missing a cut block and smashing into Marquise Crouse's knee, or a complete lack of understanding of the game plan, the way Kelvin Beachum looked during that game. Using that, we're going to transition into the other big piece of news, the signing of the Steelers' new center, Fernando Velasco. Had we heard of Fernando Velasco before this? Probably not so much. But after reviewing him on film, we did a piece on this on Behind the Steel Curtain fairly recently, Velasco looks like a pretty decent player. In fact, I might even go as far as to say he might be able to fill in, at least in the running game, as well as Pouncey did. He has a lot more experience with it. Answer me this, though, Lance. Can one player save this offensive line right now?
I think yes. I mean, I think Velasco would provide stability to this offensive line. He'd be the stabilizer. And right now, I think a young offensive line needs to feel confident that its center can make the calls, can operate in a two-minute drill, can operate the hurry-up, and is a guy that has some experience that has actually been in the battles. Because when you take a step back and look at the offensive line, I mean, you have a tackle in Adams, I don't think who's played 7 games. I know he hasn't played 10 games. You've got a guy in DeCastro that hasn't played 10 games. You have a guy in Beachum that's played less than 10 games. So if you could move a guy like Velasco to the inside, stabilize the center position, and put Beachum back in the area where he's comfortable probably playing either one of those tackles, then I think it does go a long way to saving this offensive line and providing it with some stability.
Should Beachum be even be on the field even, I think, is the main question. Another issue that you have with this team moving into week two is the fact that you do not have a healthy game-level tight end on the roster. Heath Miller, whether he plays or not, is not going to be at 100%. Doesn't seem right now that it's likely that he'll play. He was limited in practice both days of this week. Outside of him, Matt Spaeth on the IR recall list, you've got David Johnson, David Paulson, any other David in the league who might be an ineffective tight end. He's on the Steelers roster, and they can't protect the edge to save their lives with the tight ends that they have. That's the reason why Beachum was playing tight end in the first place. It wasn't because they think that he's a great tight end. It's because they needed somebody they could block. They don't have that with either David on their roster. How much of that is going to be an issue moving forward? And do you start Velasco at center? Not even just because he's a better center than Kelvin Beachum, but because you need Beachum at tight end.
It's an interesting question. If you think that Velasco can operate out of the no huddle, if you think he can do some of the 2-minute drill stuff, because I was checking out Wolfley in his show and he illustrated that and pointed that out. If you think he can make the protection calls and do those things, then you start him and you put Beachum back in a familiar position. I think you do that. But along with what you described, I think not only is pass protection a significant issue, but I think that even when even if they were to block it up pretty consistently, is there anyone in your opinion, when you look at the Steeler offense, that scares you? Is there anyone that's going to dictate coverage? Is there anyone from an offensive standpoint that you're going to game plan to take away? And when I look at the Steeler team, they don't look explosive, and I don't think they have anything out there right now that scares anybody.
The fact that you brought up the hurry-up offense makes me laugh a little bit, as if that's some kind of weapon that they can use right now. I don't think so. To be honest, I thought Emmanuel Sanders was a little bit above what I thought he was going to be. I thought he looked like he had an extra spring to his step. He looks like a guy that can make some things happen. I think Antonio Brown is the type of player that can make things happen. But outside of that, no. I mean, there's nothing from that last game that they could make anybody incredibly optimistic in the future of this offense right now. That doesn't mean that they can't get to that point. It just means that the personnel that they have right now is not going to do it. Now, the fortunate thing is they don't expect the personnel that they have to be what's going to carry them for the rest of the season. So right now I would say no, but this is going to be the sum of the whole is more than the sum of the parts kind of offense. They're going to have to rely on an outstanding quarterback with the flexibility to move the ball where he needs to, when he needs to, and getting some support from a running game. Speaking of support, we're going to take a quick break here on The Standard Is The Standard. I'm Neil Coulong along with Lance Williams. We'll be right back. Back. This is Neil Coulong, managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He is Lance Williams, formerly of Steel Curtain Radio. You are listening to The Standard Is The Standard Show. We are recording this Thursday evening during the Thursday night football game between the New England Patriots and the New York Jets in wake of the Steelers' divisional matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals. Big news that I saw this week, and I'll admit that I happened to get a pretty good chuckle out of. Media asked Bengals outside linebacker James Harrison whether he was aware of the injury to Steelers center Maurkice Pouncey, and Harrison responded something to the effect of, yeah, that's a pretty significant loss. He's the best player in their offense. An obvious and direct shot at Ben Roethlisberger, a quarterback and a player that Harrison has ripped on previously in the media. You might remember, Lance, the infamous Men's Health Journal, I forget what publication it was, but his statements after Super Bowl 45 indicting Roethlisberger to an extent. Do you feel Harrison's shot was more kind of a tongue-in-cheek, friendly, you know, back and forth between two guys, or did he actually mean that? Does he really not feel that Ben Roethlisberger is the best offensive player on the Steelers?
Have we ever seen James Harrison joke around when it comes to football? He's serious. He's absolutely dead serious.
Let me rephrase that then. Is he wrong to say that?
I don't think he's wrong per se, and people are going to hear me say that and flip out. I don't think he's wrong. I think Pouncey is arguably one of the best guys at his position. Maybe top three, I don't know. I mean, I don't sit around and rank centers, but when you look at Ben Roethlisberger, there's some debate as to where Ben Roethlisberger sits in the pantheon of quarterbacks currently. But it's definitely not top three. Nobody puts him above Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees. So in that respect, I think James Harrison is correct. However, in terms of importance to the team and the success of the team, he's 100% wrong. Ben Roethlisberger is the most important person on the Pittsburgh Steelers. You take Ben Roethlisberger off that team, you know, that's a 2-win team, maybe a 4-win team. You put Ben on it, it might be a 6-win team. So, you know, Ben is the most important player on the team, maybe not the best offensive player on the team, in my opinion.
Let's dive into this a little bit. Speaking of 6-win teams, let's assume Ben Roethlisberger stays healthy through the 16-game Steelers season this year. What kind of end result are they looking at based on Monday's performance, in week one's performance, and what on Monday will you need to see to have that number increase?
I just need to see more consistent pass protection. I need to see improvement in the offensive line, and I need to start to see some continuity in the offense, that the offense has the ability to start moving the ball consistently. If I see that even in a loss, I picked him at 10-6, then I could feel comfortable with it, because it would give me something to say that I think the offense is going to get better. And when I took a step back and sort of looked at the Steelers' schedule over the first four, you know, with Heath being out and Le'Veon Bell being out, if they can go 500, 2-2 over the first four, I think they're cooking with gas at that point. I mean, I think it's going to be tough, but if they can pass protect better, hold up better against that outstanding defensive front of the Cincinnati Bengals, if the offensive line just progresses week in, week out, then I'll feel comfortable.
It's actually a pretty good segue into our last headline of the week to this point. Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell. It seems apparent. Now, no confirmation on this, and you usually don't get them with this kind of an injury, but it seems apparent that he's going to miss another month of the season. And Steelers fans probably shouldn't expect him to be back any earlier than week 6 against the New York Jets. What is your reaction to that? What does that do to this team through the first quarter of the season?
I'm not surprised to hear that. I think that was probably the guess. And I think him coming back any time earlier or sooner than that was just wishful thinking. And I think it's just going to be running back by committee. I think it's going to be go with the hot hand or the guy that's not blowing up his blitz pickups and protection stuff, be it Felix Jones, be it Dwyer, be it Redmond. And I've talked about it repeatedly on my boards or on our boards that they're all just guys to me. So whoever's the hottest guy, whoever's not turning the ball over, whoever's executing his assignments, particularly in protection, the best, that's the guy you go with. Go with the hot hand. So, but even if Le'Veon comes back sooner, I mean, we haven't seen Le'Veon play. I mean, he's played, what, 4 snaps? So you still don't know if Le'Veon Bell is going to be better than any of the guys that you have. So I just think that the running game is going to be in flux for a majority of the year until one of these guys establishes themselves as the guy.
What we do know is Le'Veon Bell's preseason yards per carry is still higher than Isaac Redmond's in the 2013 season. Changing gears a little bit, focusing more on the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that has plenty of players that are more than just guys. You look at the defensive front seven of the Cincinnati Bengals. You have Domata Peko. You have the great Geno Atkins. You've got Vontaze Burfict. You've got scores of players that can come in and make splash plays defensively. They can get after the quarterback. They can turn the ball over. This is going to be one of the toughest matchups the Steelers will see all year. Fortunately for them, they get to see him twice. Now, playing this game on primetime after such a savage beating in week one, what's the mindset of the Steelers going to have to be going into this? I mean, starting 0-2 isn't any good, but Jarrell Casey is not anywhere near Geno Atkins. Whoever it is the Steelers put at center, they've got their work cut out for them this week, don't they? I mean, this is really just not the opponent they want to see after a game like that.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't. But the one good thing about it is that the way they played against Tennessee as a professional, they have to look at that film, digest it, and say, we've got to get better. And although Cincinnati is dominant up front, the focus has to be, and I presume that it will be razor sharp this week because of who they're going up against. So I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised that they play better than they did against Tennessee in some spots, because they know divisional opponent, Geno Atkins, Petco, Dunlop, those guys, Mike Johnson, that they have to play better. And I think they're going to rise to the challenge in spots, but I still think they're going to have their issues because Cincinnati is so talented up front. They're going to give anybody issues, be it the best offensive line, San Francisco, anybody. But I think they're going to play better on Monday, and people are going to be pleasantly surprised.
I don't think they can miss much on Monday in comparison to what they look like on Sunday. I think it's going to be one of those games. You see a lot of these, and tonight's game, in fact, whatever the final score will be, I'm not even sure. It's a good example of what happens in the NFL. It just, there's only so high that point spread is going to go before you have to remember the fact that these are both professional teams. What you get is Mike Tomlin versus Marvin Lewis, two coaches that have been in their position for quite a while now. They've played each other all the time. They know each other very, very well. It's really hard for either one of them to blow the other one out on anything more than just a series of plays. You know, it might happen. I'm not saying that it won't. It might happen, but you have to think more often than not it's going to be closer to that 13-10 game that they played last year in Pittsburgh in week 16 where Cincinnati qualified for the playoffs. A tight defensive battle. That's what I see. But let's talk about the Steelers offense a little bit. We've gotten into that. The Steelers defense a little bit. We've gone over the offense. Defensively, I think people were encouraged by what they saw from the Steelers last week, and I think there are a lot of reasons for them to have been encouraged. Going up against high-level elite playmakers like A.J. Green is never an easy proposition. There's basically no way that you can really prevent him from getting the ball outside of getting to the quarterback. Do the Steelers have enough to get to Andy Dalton, to rattle him, to put him off his game as a means to prevent A.J. Green from getting 17 and a half a catch 11 times throughout the game?
I think they can, and it's interesting that you say that, because I don't think that the Steelers particularly did a great job last year in getting sustained pressure on Andy Dalton, and they still probably did better against A.J. Green than probably most teams last year. I mean, I think his target percentage was probably under 45%, right around 45%, maybe around 50%. You know, only had one touchdown, really held him down in the first game. And the one thing that stood out to me in the game against Tennessee is that front three or front four at times, they generated more pressure than I really saw them do all of last year. And I think the injection of Steve McClendon in that defense is going to be significant in the matchup. So defensively, I think they're going to play Cincinnati well, but are they going to get the necessary turnovers that I think this offense is going to need to win this football game?
That absolutely is going to be the biggest key. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. I do know that they've intercepted Andy Dalton at least once every time they've played him in Dalton's career. So that has to be something the Steelers are going to take into account. We're going to consider all of those factors and probably a few other ones, things that, you know, we might just feel confident about when we discuss the Cincinnati Bengals 7-point home favorites in this game and make our final scores and predictions. Come up here on The Standard Is the Standard. Stick around.
Don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a-do-a It makes no difference if it's sweet or hot. Give that rhythm everything you've got. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
We're back here on The Standard Is The Standard. I'm Neil Coulon. He is Lance Williams. We're talking the Steelers versus Bengals week two. Monday Night Football, the line, Lance, last I saw it, was Bengals by 7.5. Now, I'll be honest, Monday morning when I got up, SB Nation has an odds maker guy that they use for stories pretty often. I emailed him and asked him if he might be able to tell me the last time the Steelers were double-digit underdogs. First, can you guess that game, when it was, who it was against? And second, how far was this, in your estimation, from being a double-digit underdog situation?
Let me guess. The last time the Steelers would have been double-digit underdogs. I'm going to guess it's the game that they went on the road and played New England when New England went 16-0.
You are correct. 10.5-point underdogs in that game. They lost 33-10 or something like that. Wasn't pretty. Wasn't pretty at all. That was kind of a good team. Certainly the 2013 Bengals are nowhere near that level of talent, but from what we'll see from this team, I don't think 7.5 is too far of a stretch for this game. And to be honest with you, looking at it from a prediction standpoint, just due to what I had mentioned earlier, the knowledge that they have of each other, I think the Steelers can cover that. I don't think they'll win the game, but I think they're going to be able to cover. I'm going to go with 17-13 Bengals in a game that's going to be competitive. It's going to be close. It's not, well, it's going to have Steelers fans, you know, bitching and moaning on Tuesday morning, but it's going to be a competitive game. This will be a better look at a more realistic version of the Steelers for the 2013 season.
I'm going to go with 17-6 Bengals. I think the Bengals cover. I think the Steelers will struggle to score. And I think it's going to be competitive, but I think the Bengals are going to get a turnover at some point in the game, strip sack, that puts them in some ideal field position, which breaks the game open.
You definitely see that happening. You know, that's the tricky thing. What was my score pick last week? I actually ended up being pretty close, didn't I? I changed this like 5 or 6 times like I usually do, but it's
16-10, I think. 16-6.
And granted, I didn't pick the right winner of the game, but hey, you know, I wasn't far off in the score. Not a whole lot of 16-9 games, Lance.
At one point, it was 13-2.
What a stupid game. I can't even believe that we saw that. That was just idiotic. Oh, anyway, final thoughts. Lance, take your parting shot on anything of your choice.
I think that going into the season, people who watch football and have watched it for years know that it takes some time for a young offensive line to gel. But the unfortunate thing is Steeler fan doesn't want to accept that. And I think that's just where it is. And I think, unfortunately, for the Steelers, of course they can't say it, but they're in transition. I said it last year. I think they're in transition this year. But I think where the fan base is having such a problem is that the organization can't and won't say it. It just won't say, look, we're in transition. You know, we're trying to get better. And it may be necessary for them to take a step back before they can take a step forward. They were 6-10 before they drafted Ben Roethlisberger, and the rest is history. And you've told me numerous times in numerous conversations that we've had, at times, it's hard to sustain success when you're drafting as late as they do. Now, New England has done it, and, you know, some other teams may have done it, but it gets difficult because, you know, the lower you're drafting year in, year out, it becomes more difficult. And I think Colbert's hand is no longer as hot as it was, and the Steelers may be in that bit of a down period right now, but it's a long season, so you got to be patient, buckle up, and wait and see.
Hey, top to bottom, the main thing that the Steelers are going to need to focus on and fans should pay attention to is the improvement from one game to another. It's a long season. The AFC is not that great. It really isn't. You name me one AFC team that is clearly head and shoulders above everybody else. I don't see one. I apologize if I don't feel the Denver Broncos 49-27 win over the Ravens in a primetime revenge game at home is overly impressive. I know that because I saw the Baltimore Ravens in 2011 kick the holy hell out of the Pittsburgh Steelers at home in a revenge game. That's not the same way those two teams ended up at the end of the season. They're much closer than that. those kinds of games are slanted very heavily toward the home team. The fact that Baltimore had one in 2011 and didn't have one in 2012 doesn't mean that they're that far off from Denver. Outside of that, who is better than them in the AFC? You're not seeing the New England Patriots run away with this. The Bengals obviously started off 0-1. What do you have in the AFC right now? I mean, the one team, honestly, I don't want to play out there is the Kansas City Chiefs. So I don't think it is, it's to the point this season that we can definitively say there's one team that's pulling away. And I don't think we're going to say that after week two either. Come talk to me in week nine. Let's see where the Steelers are. And frankly, if they're around 500 at that point, they're all right. That's not a bad spot to be with a young, improving offensive line. So I'm not going to freak out over this weekend, even if they are 0-2. Last time they started 0-2, they ended up winning the division and making the playoffs. It's fully possible for them to do it. They need time to come together. That being said, that, Lance Williams, is the standard, which is the standard, which is our show. That's going to wrap it up for us. I'm Neil Coulong. He was and always will be, hopefully, Lance Williams. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you Sunday, or Monday, excuse me, Steelers, Bengals, Monday Night Football. Well, all right. Oh, yeah.